Hello, everybody. Let's see if we can get this. Nice pictures. Yes. Well, I'm going to talk about the mobilization of innovation policy. In the pursuit of economic growth, but not any kind of growth, sustainable economic growth. That is economic growth that respects and is consistent with planetary boundaries. So, but first, a little bit about innovation policy. Now, what is it? Where does it come from? In one way, innovation policy is as old as the states itself. Politicians have, for a long time, mobilized innovation to solve particular challenges they face. From canals to railways to the Manhattan Project for that sake. But as this graph shows, actually there was very little talk about innovation policy before the 90s. And it was people from SPRU, Roy Rothwell, for example, who started to talk about to introduce the term innovation policy in policy discussions in the early 1980s. And it only took off about 10 or 20 years after that. So as a policy approach, innovation policy emerged at that time. And that was in a specific setting, namely the stagnations of the 70s and 80s. In the Western world. And politicians were interested in an approach that could lift society and the economy out of that stagnation. And that's when evolutionary and innovation system theorists and thinkers came along and provided a basis for that. And that gave innovation policy as a policy approach a very distinct feature that was not present previously. And that is what I will call a holistic systemic approach. So holistic in the sense that it didn't only emphasize R&D and supply, but also other factors that mattered for innovation. And systemic in the sense that these various factors were related to each others. And then addressing problems that could be dealt with through policies derived through concrete by concrete analysis of this situation. So a little bit about holistic policy making. There are two aspects. There are many things that could have been said, but there are two aspects which I think is particularly relevant for our discussion. The first is that I mentioned that there are many factors that impact innovation. It is of little help to have superior knowledge if you don't have the skills necessary for its exploitation, the required finance or demand, and so on. Lack of any of those factors can easily kill the innovation project and the dynamics of the economy as a whole, so-called blocking mechanisms. And an important aspect of policy then is to identify these blocking mechanisms and do some things about it. Moreover, a number of sectoral policies, mainly created for other aims, also matter for innovation. And if you want an effective innovation policy, you also need to take these into account when designing and implementing innovation policy instruments. So, an effective innovation policy requires capabilities, first, to analyze the innovation system dynamics, then design and implement intervention, and finally, coordinate policies across a number of different domains. And this may require the creation of new forms of governance that didn't exist previously. So, to the present situation. So, in one way, we could say that the situation today reminds us of the situation in the 1980s, in the sense that we now have had about 10 years of economic stagnation, increasing unemployment, and similar types of problems. So there is a stagnation problem that in one way is particular to Europe. But there is also one element that is novel compared with the 1980s, and that is that we now know much more about environmental challenges, particularly the climate challenge, and the need to transform the economy to sustainability and do it quickly. And this will require massive innovation for sure. So this gives these two challenges, the economic challenge and the environmental challenge, gives rise to a policy challenge, that is to develop a new policy approach that actually is able to deal with both of these things, both the economy and the needed transformation. So how is Europe doing on climate? So this little figure, which is from a book that I made together with Staffan Lastadius and Ben Martin and several others, tells us something about that. So on the top here, you have GDP. As you can see, GDP slowed down with the advent of the financial crisis around 2007. On the bottom, the dotted line, that's the greenhouse gas intensity. It tells us how much greenhouse gases we emit per unit of GDP. Luckily, this has went down over time, which means that we emit less and less greenhouse gases per unit of GDP over time. So it has declined by around 2%. But GDP also increased historically with around 2%. And as a result of that, European emission of climate gases was roughly constant from the early 90s and to the beginning of the financial crisis. So after the financial crisis, greenhouse gases emissions have declined somewhat. But the question is, is this the result of the stagnation, or is it the result of that we have been better in dealing with it? And the unfortunate answer is that it is the result of the stagnation. That is what you can see here in this figure. If GDP had continued at its earlier trend, then greenhouse gas emissions would have continued to be constant. And this is a very, very unfortunate truth that presents itself to us. That is that if we want to solve the economic stagnation by, say, pushing up demand, pushing economic growth, without doing something else, we will at the same time make the environmental problems worse. So to solve both of these problems at the same time, we have to do things really differently. So to curb emissions before the end of the century, the greenhouse gas intensity must decline much faster than in the past, about double as fast as in the past. And how can this be done? Well, I think it's very interesting to look at examples in this respect. And being in Germany, I, I thought it was natural to look at the German Energiewende, but there are other examples of similar kinds. For example, wind energy in Denmark, or even electrical cars in Norway, and so on, that we could discuss. But look at the Energiewende, renewables as a share of total German electricity consumption. It increased from around 5% to more than 30% in only 15 years. So this is an example of the type of change that we need. Because remember, we need very radical changes in the direction of sustainability, and we need very quick changes. What made Germany's Energiewende an innovation policy, even if it is a sectoral policy, was that it supported several different competing technologies at the same time. So less mature technologies got more support than the more mature technologies. So for example, there was much more support to solar than to wind. Secondly, a second characteristic was that this policy involved users to a very major extent. So it was a demand-oriented policy. And it led to a surprisingly rapid transformation with very positive global repercussions, other countries coming in, the price of the competitiveness of the new technologies increasing, making them more relevant for other parts of the globe. So, and it actually contributed to something very, very important. And that is what I would call a technological revolution in renewable energy. So most of us know the theory of technological revolutions from Schumpeter, Christopher Freeman, Carlota Perez, and so on. Is based on the idea that while all innovations may be good, some innovations are more pervasive than others. And particularly the existence of a core factor with rapidly declining costs, almost unlimited availability, very broad applicability and pervasive effects may create massive opportunities and transform the global economy. I will argue that renewable energy fits that bill. The common element of renewable energy is that they harvest the sun in different ways, in the forms of wind or from the sun itself, they use it to produce electricity, which is then used to power machinery and for heating and other purposes. So if this becomes the dominant way to produce and use energy in the future, it will go a long way in making the economy more sustainable. And this little picture here just tells you something about the dynamics of this process. And the decline in prices for these technologies, which now make them competitive with other or superior to other forms of energy, even without subsidies. So what I would suggest is a new innovation policy stance. So the focus of policy should not only or mainly be about supporting R&D, but providing direction, exploiting and creating opportunities, such as the Energiewende did, supporting experimentation and learning and stimulating change. An important element could be the support of renewables, increase energy efficiency, very important, electrify transport, reduce waste, promote a circular economy, change ways of life, the way we organize society and so on. Because these changes, increasing the role of renewables and electrification, for example, of existing sectors, will require also a lot of organizational innovation and innovation in the way we live and work. And such a policy needs to penetrate all policy areas, sectors and levels, and engage users and other stakeholders. Engaging users, as we saw in the example of the Energiewende, is not only important to get the policy going, but it's also more democratic. But it's also more effective because users and other stakeholders have resources, insights, knowledge that is important for the further developments. And innovations in governance, as I mentioned earlier, coordination across levels and sectors will also be required. So, being short on time, I will just mention that in earlier times and in earlier innovation policy discussions, providing direction was something that was regarded as extremely complicated. But today we actually have a direction because all countries in the world met up in Paris and told us what was necessary if future economic growth should be consistent with planetary boundaries. All countries and other parties are urged to make plans that are consistent with those goals that all these countries agreed to in Paris. That is the transition to sustainability. But direction can also be very important in policy because as Mariano Mazzucato has pointed out many times, there is no lack of talent, knowledge and resources for succeeding with the transition. But lack of opportunity and uncertainty about future demand can seriously constrain innovation efforts by private firms. So credible political goals for society's development, that it's a vision, can help unleashing innovation. So one of the most efficient things that the state policymakers can do is actually to influence the expectations of firms. Finally, in my 19th minute, let me just to go back to the particular situation in Europe, just to make the argument that an innovation policy approach that focuses on sustainability can also be an inclusive policy. And the reason for that is that the poorest areas in Europe also are the ones that are most in need of radical change towards sustainability. And you see this very clearly in this graph here, where you have greenhouse gas intensity plotted against GDP per capita. So the poorest areas in Europe are also those with the highest greenhouse gas intensity, that is the least efficient environmentally and economically. So what is needed is a European program for fair and sustainable growth, with particular focus on the poorer countries' areas, targeting investments for reducing greenhouse gas emissions. And such a policy approach could deliver growth and jobs where it is most needed, while simultaneously speeding up the transition. Thank you.